B-Pod Studios.
This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 Sports Hub.
Yeah, I mean, a long way to go. Obviously, he's not familiar with our offense. The systems that he's been in have been, you know, quite different. John does the West Coast offense, which there's very little carryover from their system to our system. Not bad or good, just, you know, we've had players before. It's just not all the carryover. And similar thing in Pittsburgh. So, he's working hard to pick it up, and we're working hard to get it to him. Try to, get him caught up to speed as quickly as he can. It's too much ground to make up in a few days, but we do the best we can, and we'll see how it goes.
Patriots head coach Bill Belichick on Antonio Brown practicing with the team this week, and is he maybe giving himself a little bit of an out there, Chris? It's Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub, and saying, hey, well, he hasn't got the offense yet, so maybe that's why we've got to sit him. So is there still a chance?
It's true. I mean, I know, like, some people think it's like, oh, you're saying he should lie to the. I got a tweet here saying, oh, you're saying you should lie to the media. Like, it's true. He is not up to speed on the offense. The guy officially signed here on Monday. So that would be a legitimate reason to hold him out, to give him, you're playing the Dolphins. You can beat them without him, right? He doesn't really know the offense. You can give him another week. And it has the added benefit of him not playing the week that a civil lawsuit comes out alleging he committed sexual assault and rape. It's me. It's a win-win.
All right. Your call's on Antonio Brown, 617-779-0985. Tom in Connecticut, you're next here on Gasper Murray. Hey.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon.
What's up?
A couple real quick things maybe you haven't thought. Actually, Jim, you brought it up about possibly AB being overrated. But before I address that, a woman called into Zoe's show yesterday, season ticket holder, and she was very articulate, very heartfelt, and she sounded like she was semi-stunned that the Crafts and the Patriots would totally disregard 50% of their fans. And the good point that she made was, everybody's saying innocent until proven guilty. He admitted to doing something pretty egregious in that horrific email, right?
Oh, yeah, the text messages.
Text exchange about...
You know what I'm talking about, where he put something on her back, right?
Correct.
Okay, guys, he admitted that. That alone would be a reason for Kraft to run and get the hell out of there. He admitted to sexually assaulting that woman. That's on an email, okay? So I don't know why they keep saying innocent until proven guilty. Yeah, maybe on the rape charge, but not on that other thing. And then also this total disrespect for women in that email. Every time when they talk about Antonio all through the season, it's not going to be former Steeler, former Oakland. They're going to say New England Patriot player. Why on earth would you want to have that continually bashing a franchise that's propagated to be, one of the best in the industry? Now, the last thing I'll say, Jim, you brought up a good point. You got to remember, AB was very productive in the Steelers' offense. What's one of the things that Ben does that Brady does not do? Ben extends plays, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You could go back, I'm telling you, over the 9 years and on film, and you could look at how many times, AB broke off a route, and then he started to freelance out in the secondary, and Ben was able to extend the play to 4, 5, 6 seconds and then make a long pass or a touchdown, okay? Brady's not going to do that. The second thing is, the reason why his stats are so great is because he demanded it, and it became damaging to the Steelers. He demanded 10, 12, 13 catches, and he always threw a fit. And I don't know if you realize, the last thing I'll mention, in the 2016 AFC Championship game against the Patriots, the reason why Ben wanted to retire after that season or after that game, it was because of Antonio. Apparently, he was pouting in that game because he wasn't getting the ball thrown to him. You guys were double covering him, and he ran the wrong routes on purpose, and he quit on routes, and he also was throwing hissy fits. And this is in an AFC Championship game.
Thanks, Tom. I'm going to let you go on that. Yeah, no, I don't doubt it. And look, a lot of those big plays that he's right, and I've heard him before. He's a Steeler fan. So
yeah, that was a good point, though. Yeah. It's a valid point.
Like a lot of AB's big plays is when Roethlisberger's waddling out of a tackle and it's just chuck it and go.
Waddling out
of that's not part of Brady's game. It really never has been, especially not at 42.
And this is a much more precision passing game. I mean, you have to be where Brady expects you to be. There's some element of freelance at time. There was with Moss. You know, the two of them would see something and Moss would do something and, you know, Brady would just sort of chuck it deep. But no, I mean, this is a precision passing game. And I thought he articulated pretty well, Jim, sort of just the football concerns about Antonio Brown, which were the reasons I didn't want him before this, you know, sexual assault allegation. Just the idea that he would quit in an AFC championship game or that he pouts when he doesn't get the ball. Because I think there will be weeks here where he has to be a decoy. And is he going to be okay with that, especially in a free agent year, a year where he's trying to rebuild his value and get some of the money back that he pissed away in Oakland?
Frank in Boston on AB, you're next here on Gaspar Murray. Hey, Frank.
Yeah, hi. I think there are two things you guys and everybody else are missing, except, frankly, for that last caller.
Yep.
The first thing is on the question of whether or not the Pats knew, and specifically the Crafts knew, it seems somewhat academic because they certainly know now and chose not to change their minds. That's my first point.
Yeah.
Then the second point is on the question of whether he did it or not. Clearly, it's an open question with regard to the rape allegation, but it seems pretty clear he's admitting to sexual assault on her back in those texts, and it's very clear and straightforward. So I'm just surprised why that's not sufficient for the Patriots, and it's not sufficient for the NFL in their commissioner's exempt list, because that is the textbook definition of or one of the definitions of sexual assault. So, you know, the rape thing is one thing, but those texts are incredibly damning as well as being disgusting.
Yeah, if nothing else, if I'm a woman that's a Patriots season ticket holder or just a fan of the team, like the texts alone are just, ugh, like they're misogynistic, they're repugnant, like it's, and that's even just removing the multiple MIGs, Silence of the Lambs act on the back, just everything else and how the words he used, that's a reference that obviously you got, Chris. I don't know if anyone else in the audience did, but sorry. It's what happened.
No, go ahead. It's fine. Give me a
but
minute.
But if you're a female fan of the Patriots, like, I don't know, I can understand why you'd want an explanation or you'd want the ownership to talk. Like, you just see that. Like, isn't that, like, what? Why? Like, you at least explain to me as a female fan of your team and someone who has bought much of your gear and I go to the games, I support your team. Like, why? Why did you sign this guy? Why do you want to be associated with him?
No, I mean, I think it's a valid point and it's obviously a valid feeling, but I think we all know sort of what the deal is, you know, unfortunately, in the NFL. It's a sliding scale of talent versus baggage and trouble, and this guy's really talented. I think if this guy were a special teams player, if we were talking about, like, Nate Ebner here, do you think it would be treated the same?
Oh,
or
God,
handled
no.
the same?
No.
No. And so that's, you know, special people get special treatment, and that's the reality of it. And there's a million other ways that it can be explained away by us or the Patriots or whatever, but it's like, this guy's a damn good football player, and all his life, people have looked the other way at his behavior, and that's not going to stop now because he's a New England Patriot.
Edwin in Shrewsbury actually wants to talk about last week's game. I find these calls genuinely refreshing at this point in the week. Go ahead, Edwin, you're next here on Gaspar Murray. Hey.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So, something that, you know, obviously, you know, we looked like a very well-oiled machine last week against the Steelers, but something that stuck out to me was, specifically speaking, Brady's first touchdown pass to Dorsett, where he took that one-step drop.
Mm-hmm.
Just seeing what he kind of did on that play, how he just rifled the ball in there, like that was like a straight frozen rope as far as I'm concerned, and you just fit it right in the breadbasket to Dorsett for that touchdown. And I just feel that, you know, Brady is almost could be at a vintage level perhaps this season, and he might reach vintage levels with his stats as a result of his preparation in the offseason. So I just wanted to see what y'all thought about that.
Yeah, I thought, so him as a whole, I thought the first quarter he was shaky. I don't know if it was he was worried of people being at his feet. T.J. Watt had a good game on that Pittsburgh front, so I don't know. He was getting a little bit disruptive there. So, I don't know. It took Brady a little bit, but once he got in rhythm, that first touchdown to Dorsett, the caller's right. Like, the arm strength was there. The deep ball was there. The other touchdown to Dorsett, it was like, whoo, where'd this come from? He, much like the rest of the team, looked like mid-November. You know what I mean? Like, he looks like I mean, he bulked up a little bit over the offseason, so I don't know. Like, he looks like he's ready to have a big year.
He also owns the Steelers.
Well, that too.
You know, he's always owned the Steelers.
But a lot of it has been with Rob Gronkowski, you know, so I thought that might have been a little bit of a drop, at least in this game.
That's a fair point. I think, you know, early on, again, he missed some throws, missed some reads. But overall, I thought he was good. He was very good because he's Tom Brady. I mean, you know, that's sort of what you expect. I think the one thing, though, that those guys will take away from that game is, you know, 0-for-3 in the red zone. You got the big plays, and that sort of negated that, the fact that you weren't good in the red zone. But the inability to execute in the red zone, that was an issue early last year for this offense. And it's something that they need to make sure does not become an issue this season, because you have to be able to execute in the red zone.
All right, we'll continue to take your calls on Antonio Brown, obviously, because I see a bunch of you hanging. We will get to you. But I do want to pause, though, in the next segment. I do want to get more of the Miami perspective of what's going on down there. We're going to talk to Adam Beasley, covers the team. Miami Herald, is that who he works for?
Yes, the Miami Herald.
So we're going to talk to him, because after 1 week, it already feels like a completely sinking ship in Miami with Brian Flores in control. So we're going to get that and some perspective on the Miami side of things ahead of tomorrow's game. Coming up next here on Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
We haven't received any information like that, so... You know, I think, you know, for us, you know, we just need to focus on what's going on inside our building, and not worry about all the, you know, anything that's going on outside. I think we got to get better. From a fundamental standpoint, from a communication standpoint, from really overall, and that's the goal right now. And, you know, anything that else that's going on outside, we need to just focus on what's going on in our building.
All right, so that's Dolphins head coach Brian Flores, midweek, talking about the report immediately after the shellacking by the Baltimore Ravens last week that many Dolphins players have called their agents and said, get me off this sinking ship. Ah, I don't want any part of this. And they've already traded off parts. Feels like there's a big tank job going on there, which, I don't blame them. You know, try to sink for a quarterback here, whether it's next year or maybe in a couple of years.
Tank for Tua. Yeah,
win never for Trevor Lawrence of Clemson in a couple of years. So, hey, I wouldn't blame them. But that is
just suck for Justin Herbert.
Yeah, seems like a real problem going on there in Miami. And as the Patriots get ready to take them on tomorrow at 1 o'clock, catch it here on 98.5 Sports Hub. We'll want a little bit more perspective on what's going on with the Dolphins. Talking to Miami Herald Dolphins reporter Adam Beasley, who joins us here on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Good afternoon, Adam. What's up?
You guys know all the slogans. That's our lives every day down here.
Adam, that's good, man.
So is it about to be like full-on mutiny there, at least with some of the players that, well, like Minka Fitzpatrick or even Xavier Howard? Like, is this what the hell's going on with this team?
Well, they've done a very successful job of rooting out a lot of the potential mutiny leaders. There's not that many veterans left on this team, and when your second-year guy who's 22 years old is your squeaky wheel, you know you don't have many leaders left on that team. It's funny, Akeem Spence was cut during final cutdowns, and he just got picked up by the Eagles, and he told reporters up in Philadelphia, man, I really feel bad for the guys that are still there. They know what's going on, and it's out of their control. So I think that's really the sense of what the players that remain have that feeling. I know there are guys like Minka, and there's a handful of other guys that would like out. But by and large, I mean, this is already the youngest team in the NFL. I think their average age is just around 25 years old. There aren't that many guys that can be that mutiny leader. There, you know, I wrote about a potential revolt when Laremy Tunsil was talked about being traded, and then they went and got rid of all of their players that would lead that revolt. So, yeah, I mean, the ones that are left are young. They just want a job in the NFL. They want a career. They want that second contract. And there's, you know, there's not a lot left to bang that drum. Now, I'm not saying the locker room's a cheerful place. They know what's up. It's a bit depressing to go in there. But I think they've gotten the Dolphins, the worst is behind them when it comes to at least player dissatisfaction, because they've reached the stage of acceptance and the seven stages of grief.
Man. I mean, when you say acceptance, Adam, I mean, are they willing to accept what happened in week one where they just get destroyed 59-10 and they're down 42-3 at one point in the game? I mean, is that what it's going to be like all season? And if it is, you know, how can Brian Flores, who we're familiar with here, really have sort of any credibility with those guys?
Yeah, I mean, that was an historic loss, guys. It was awful. It was embarrassing. It was really painful for the players and the coaches to go through. But it's really hard to give up 59 points. I mean, Dolphins is the most points they've allowed in the regular season in their history. Only once they allow more, and that was Marino's last game against the Jaguars in the playoffs in the late 90s, 62-7. So to think it's going to be like this week in, week out, I think that's a bit far-fetched. They're going to lose a ton, though, and 0-16 is a real possibility. What we need to see for this not to be a complete catastrophe is improvement. We need to identify, say, 20, 25 of these young guys that are going to be part of the plan going forward, and how do they, you know, how do they progress? How do they improve? Do they get better week after week? Is a, you know, a 49-point loss in week one, is it down to a 14-21-point loss in week 10? It's kind of sick to talk about it in those terms, but that's the progress they're looking for this year. Are we more competitive this week than we were last? Do we figure out how to use these pieces that don't really fit right now more this week than we did last? And maybe we can steal a win or two. The Bengals are on the schedule, the Redskins, the Giants. There's some wins that are out there, potentially. They're just going to play a whole lot better then than they did last week.
Talking to Adam Beasley, covers the Dolphins for the Miami Herald, joining us here on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. So, Adam, being in that locker room, talking to some of the players, even some of the coaches, they have to know what the point spread is for tomorrow's game. It's as high as, you know, 18.5, 19, depending on the sports book or bookie that you go to. Is there some motivation there, at least? I mean, look, they want to have a better showing. That's obvious than they did against Baltimore. But is there something there as well, like, you know, this is like a historic number for the Patriots going into this tomorrow. Is there some...
Yeah, I mean, it's the biggest, I think they're the biggest home dogs in this century. And if they would win, it would be the biggest upset statistically in NFL history, bigger than even Super Bowl III. So that's how much of a long shot the Dolphins are tomorrow. I'm sure on some level there's pride that kicks in. I asked a bunch of the guys in the locker room if it's been used as motivation, and they said no. Flores says no, we just have to worry about us. We can't worry about anything else, which is fine. Maybe at their meeting tonight, he puts it up on the big board. Look at this. Caesars thinks you're 18.5 points worse than the Patriots. They think you have no chance. I mean, guys, the money line, do you see the money line? That's even more staggering to me than the point spread. The money line is minus 3,000 for the Pats. That means, what did I say? I wrote it, I think. A $300 bet will net you $10 if the Patriots win.
Yeah,
I mean it's insane. It's absolutely insane how little chance the Dolphins have, and for good reason. They're talent bereft, and they got the Jesus beat out of them last week. So yeah, no, it's certainly they're aware of it. It's funny, guys. There's one of the biggest upsets in the last 30 years. Was last year the Bills going to Minneapolis and beating the Vikings. I'm not sure if you remember that game.
Yeah, remember that game, yeah.
And there are two participants of that game in the Dolphins locker room. Deion Lacy played for the Bills, and Danny Isadora played for the Vikings. So it was kind of interesting getting their perspective. They didn't want to be too backwards looking, but they know what it takes for that kind of upset to happen on either side. I would say it in a normal year, the Dolphins have a shot against the Patriots because New England is just so god-awful down here. I don't know what it is. They must just not sleep well the night before, get some of that South Beach flu. I don't know what's going on. But I think Belichick is determined this week to beat them by 100. I mean, I really do. I think he's so sick and tired of hearing everything about how much they struggle. Brady struggles down here. He's not the same quarterback at Hard Rock Stadium. It is that the other 31 stadiums in the country. I think they're sick and tired of that. And that's why I don't think there's a point spread big enough that the Patriots can't cover. I mean, they're going to score at least 40 tomorrow, and I don't see how the Dolphins score 20.
When you look at, Brian Flores and the type of culture he's tried to implement down there, Adam, how much buy-in has there been on that? I know he has the saying TNT takes no talent. How much buy-in is there on the culture he's trying to implement, and how similar is it to the Patriots? I know recently he talked about, we're not trying to do the Patriots. We're trying to do our own culture. But frankly, the Patriots, that's pretty much all he knows.
Yeah, I think it's a player-by-player situation. I think there are tons of players, particularly the rookies and free agents to sign with the Dolphins and the waiver wire pickups, that owe a lot of their career to Brian Flores and Chris Greer because they're the guys that gave him the shot. The Dolphins went and traded for three different offensive linemen the last week of the preseason. I mean, those guys would otherwise have been cut, maybe not even the league if the Dolphins hadn't made an effort to go get them. So I'd assume they all have some sense of obligation to the guy. And the rookies don't know any better, right? I mean, they've been in the league for 15 minutes, so they don't know what an NFL locker room is supposed to look like. So there's real, I think there's buy-in from them. Jerome Baker's a leader. Daniel Kilgore's a leader. They've got some veterans that are on board, but there are also a select few of guys, and I think Minkah Fitzpatrick is one of them, that looks at that coaching staff sideways. You mentioned the TNT wall. It's kind of high school-y to have to go and run and touch a wall and mess up. And it's even more egregious when the heat index is 110. You've been out sweating for 2.5 hours. So that stuff kind of wore thin. I know Flores ran one of the hardest training camps some of these guys have experienced, and it's not like it's translated into great success on the field. I mean, they busted their ass all summer, and they still got the living crap kicked out of them last week. So there's going to be a vocal minority in that locker room that's not going to be pleased. I mean, the vast majority of those guys were not brought in by Flores. Greer obviously had a big say in the roster last year, but it was a totally different coaching staff with a different philosophy. So, yeah, no, I think by and large the locker room's fine, but, you know, there are going to be 3 or 4 or 5 guys in there that are just not going to be happy until they're on another football team.
All right, Adam, thanks for taking the time. I guess at least aesthetically speaking, it'll be easy on the eyes tomorrow because the Dolphins are wearing their old throwbacks, right?
Yeah. I mean, as long as this tropical depression we got brewing on off the coast doesn't swamp the place tomorrow. I mean, that's if there is one way the Dolphins can keep it close, it's just the Patriots aren't able to throw the football. But pretty sure that there is some wet ball drills going on Foxborough this past week. I think Belichick's prepared for that.
All right, Miami Herald's Dolphins reporter Adam Beasley, also of 790 The Ticket's Finns Insider. You can follow him on Twitter if you'd like, at Adam H. Beasley. Thanks for taking the time today.
All right, Gavin.
Thanks, Adam. And he joins us, Adam, on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. So, yeah, he thinks the Pats cover the spread, as do I. I know it's an astronomical number, and I know that they've had a lot of lack of success down there in recent years. What is it, 1-5 in their last 6 games, Chris?
Yes, 1-5 in the last 6. Brady, here's another stat. Brady, 7-10 down there in his career. He has, in the regular season, 20 AFC East losses. Half of them have been down in Miami.
I know. It's a bad team, but, not tomorrow. That is a bad, 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 bad team. Although it's weird. Like, even though they've been bad in the past, Brady has that number. Here's another team he has a bad number against that I just can't wrap my head around. That's the Carolina Panthers. I want to touch on what happened Thursday night, along with more of your phone calls and Antonio Brown. I see a lot of you hanging. We'll do that right after the Sports Hub headlines here with an update on Antonio Brown.
This is Jasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Christian, we felt had a good opportunity to score. And so we went fake reverse, ghost action, trying to, deke him a little bit, and we had every opportunity, and, we thought we could at least get the first down, and unfortunately we didn't.
Is Cam's foot such that
No, his foot is not such. Anymore. We don't trust it. Don't even worry about the foot. The foot's got nothing to do with it, okay?
I just want to touch on this for a moment. Gaspar Amari, 98.5, the Sports Hub. So that's Carolina Panthers head coach Riverboat Ron Rivera. After Thursday night's loss, the Tampa Bay Bucks, 20-14 was the final. Talking about the final play on offense for the Panthers, which is really one of the most hideous things you'll ever see in your entire life. If you stayed up and you watched this piece of crap, and by the way, I had no intention of watching this, even me.
Sure,
Chris,
you did. Yeah.
No,
this was a Jim Murray special.
I know.
Two crappy teams, two crappy quarterbacks, crappy officiating with controversy. That is a Jim Murray special on a Thursday night.
Yeah, and on Thursday night, no less, because I am the connoisseur of bad Thursday night
yes.
football. I am legitimately excited for Titans-Jags next Thursday.
No joke.
You've got a problem, man.
I know, but I want to see this Titans defense full game. I want to see that in real time. I think they're building something there, is Mike Vrabel. And I find the Gardner Minshew story kind of interesting. That would be nice if he became a story for the NFL. I know.
I have a problem, sir. You have
and I'm
a
not
problem.
Even betting on these games. It's a sickness.
That's what
it really
makes it
is.
Worse, is that you're not betting on them.
You probably have no vested interest whatsoever.
No, it's gross. I understand that, McCarthy. I need more of a life. But here was the thing. So I detest Jameis Winston. Like, he's offensive to me as a quarterback, how he plays. And that team, like, I just hate the Bucs anyway, as irrelevant a franchise there is in sports. And the Panthers, too. Like, how they looked in week one. I'm like, I'm actually not watching this. I was getting my monthly massage Thursday night. I usually follow that with a trip to the casino so I can sit at the poker tables. But the thing is, you go to the Encore, in case you don't know, everywhere you look, there's a TV. So you can't help yourself. But end up watching the thing like I did. So I watched that piece of crap on Thursday night, And there was a couple of quick takeaways. You hear Rivera after that game. It's just, once again, an indictment, Chris, and I think you watched this, of just how bad the coaching is in the NFL. Rivera has been the coach of the year in the NFL twice, 2015, 2013. I'll never understand it, how Brady and Belichick actually have a losing record against he and this team.
It's a little weird.
He stinks. And then you have their offensive coordinator in Norv Turner, and that play he's talking about. In what world do you think that running a direct snap sweep to the short side of the field on 4th and 1 from the 1.5-yard line is a good call? Your quarterback is Cam Newton, and more on him in a second because he had a bad night. But he is 6'5", 250 pounds, and built like a damn linebacker. You snap it to him, you have him fall forward, you get the first down, you get 4 cracks at the end zone to actually win the game. But you do a stupid wildcat play? A wildcat play? Idiocy. Pure idiocy, once again, that you see from the coaches throughout the NFL. It's Belichick and everybody else, and we've known that, but it is a precipitous drop from Belichick and everybody else, because that is one of the dumbest things I've ever seen in my entire life. You deserve to lose when you have a play like that. And then, and this is bad for the league, because obviously I think we all know, like, a lot of the success of the NFL and getting eyes on that product, and they're going to have it anyway, but you need your quarterbacks. And without the quarterbacks in the league, the ratings will drop. There's not much reason to tune in. It's just, you need, you know, it hinges on the play of the quarterbacks and having your marquee guys in there. And Cam Newton might be cooked. He's now played in these last couple of games, obviously, but he, in his last 8 starts, this isn't just about 0-2 so far this season. Last 8 starts for Cam Newton, 0-8, 9 touchdowns, 10 picks.
Oof.
Bad, like alarmingly bad. So he's either way more hurt than anyone's admitting, or this is the cumulative effect of the beating that he has taken, especially since that Super Bowl run in 2015. If you remember the following
year, MVP year,
Week 1, the rematch against Denver, he took maybe one of the biggest beatings I've seen in the last 10 years that any quarterback has taken. But he looks cooked through 2 games. And the maybe the worst thing of all, if you've watched any of the Panthers or you watched Thursday night, he looks like he'd rather be anywhere else. He's missing throws, standing in the pocket, guys wide open. So it's either the shoulder, lower body, brain is cooked, something. But he don't even look like he wants to even be on the field anymore. So that, I think, is also bad for the league. But you, the officiating in this game rubbed you the wrong way, the pass interference thing.
I mean, I just, you know, look, I understand technically it's sort of here's the issue for me. We put this stupid rule in, which I hate to begin with. I don't think that they should be able to review pass interference, but it got rammed through by self-serving Sean Payton, even though it wasn't ready, even though it hadn't been vetted enough to be something that could actually be put into practice without controversy and with consistency. But they did it anyway because he had to have, you know, he had to get his way. That's what it had to be. And then you look at it. I don't like the rule to begin with, but if it's in the book, it's in the book, right? Like, otherwise, like, now I feel like the NFL's at a point where they're just trying to pretend that there's no rule on the book to be able to put a flag on the field for pass interference, you know, when it's not called on the field. They don't like the rule. They know it's flawed. So now we're just going to pretend it doesn't exist at all. And that's what bothered me on that play late in the game. And I understand the contact. It was close. You know, it probably started before he threw the ball. But there was still contact happening when the ball was in the air. And I think you could have just done the right thing there and thrown the flag. Otherwise, what's the point? Why do we even have this rule? And you can see Rivera was exasperated about it, essentially, you know, looking at it and saying, well, you guys looked at this. You can see that there's interference taking place, and we're just not going to... At this point, I sent this in the show email for Felger and Mads. For those of you who remember the movie The Last Boy Scout,
yeah,
it's that opening scene. That's pretty much where we are if you want to get a pass interference penalty. Now, in that movie, it's an offensive player who runs down the field with a gun and starts shooting other players. I mean, that's literally the point that we're at for them to overturn these, and I just think it's ridiculous. And it goes back to Riveron. You remember how fine Riveron was with the old catch rule? Remember the touchdown he took away from Kelvin Benjamin against the Patriots?
Yeah.
He took that away. That was on review. And now it's the same guy who's sitting in that office at 345 Park Avenue in New York who's looking at the play that happened Thursday night and saying, well, you know, there's no penalty. And, yeah, you know, technically, you know, we can't call illegal contact on review, which they can't, but there's still enough there to throw the pass interference flag, at least in my view. And it's like, so if we have this rule and we're not going to rectify mistakes or do the right thing, then what's the point?
All right, your call's in, Antonio Brown, 617-779-0985. Also, in case you missed it in the latest update with Matt McCarthy, he is traveling with the team. He is making the trip to Miami. That from Mike Giardi of NFL Network, which means, well, he is going to play. Also, Brandon Bolden downgraded to out And also looking here, Mike Reese, ESPN Boston, Marcus Cannon, who has the shoulder injury he sustained late last week against Pittsburgh, officially listed as questionable, but he is not expected to play tomorrow. Top backup is Corey Cunningham. But again, the big important news there is that Antonio Brown making the trip to Miami, and looks like he is going to play tomorrow. Let's go to Cheryl. You're next here on Gaspar Murray. Hello, Cheryl.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. What's up?
Well, I am a Pats fan, and I am very disappointed that the Pats signed AB and that they're playing him. But here's a thought for you. You're wondering how they can do this. I work in the investment management industry, and investment managers are paid to earn money for their clients. So I might not, as a person, want to buy an oil stock, but as an investment manager, I need to buy an oil stock because it's going to improve the performance of my portfolio, hence my clients' returns. So we look at the Patriots as a public trust, but it's really not. It's a business. Now, I don't agree with that, but that's a theory that you can think about. And I'll hang up now, unless you want to ask me a question.
No, it's okay, Cheryl. Appreciate
it. It's a valid point.
It's a fancy financial way of saying you just turn a blind eye, but I get it.
Yeah, I mean, well articulated. But yeah. She's basically saying, you know, in her business, it's a bottom line business. Yeah. Do you make money or not? In the football business, it's a bottom line business. Do you win or not? And you do what you think you can do to put yourself in position to reach that bottom line. And that's what the Patriots have done.
Yeah. And I get it. A lot of you have already just decided, you know what? His past transgressions are just that. And I'm moving forward. And Antonio Brown is now a member of the Patriots. I've already ordered his number 17 jersey. I understand that.
And he's a better person now because he's under a Patriots.
Right. Yeah. You know, if he's going to be reformed and anyone's going to reform him, of course, it's Dear Leader Bill. I understand that kind of thinking. That's just, that's not me. I want them to win. I still consider myself a fan of the team. I actually pay out of pocket for a road trip and doing it for the better part of 15 years. This year, my trip is Philadelphia. But I just find him detestable. Like, you didn't need him. If you watched last Sunday's game, and I was worried about the wide receivers, you don't even need him. And he's here? Ugh. One open line you want to join us, 617-779-0985. Back to your calls on AB after this. And I know Chris has a quick thought on what has transpired with the FIBA World Cup. You know, that's some basketball
going on.
We're
number seven.
Woo! Yeah. And what it may mean for the Celtics going forward. So that and your calls next. Gaspar Murray, 98.5 of Sports Up.
Teams that they were playing against, we have to keep in mind that they have been playing together for a very, very long time. You know, the culture of European basketball is much different than that of the States, where a lot of these teams grow up playing together. And so they have a natural understanding of what they like and don't like and how they play defense together, offense together. They know how each other think. And that was a huge leg up for them. And we put together a group of guys that are really, really talented basketball players individually, but haven't had enough time together yet to be able to figure out how to take some of these teams apart.
All right, that's Kobe Bryant. Sounded like he's not surprised that Team USA has sucked in the FIBA World Cup. Who did they lose to? Serbia the other day?
We're number seven. Woo!
Yeah, they beat Poland today. So, they're number seven in the world.
They've lost to Serbia and France.
Ooh. Gaspar Murray, 98.5 of Sports. We'll get to your AB calls in just a moment, but I know you wanted to touch on this quickly because you feel like this could potentially be setting up, some problems going forward for the Celtics before they even tip off.
Yeah, I just think it was not really, obviously it wasn't successful for USA basketball, which I just have to say quickly is something I do care about deeply. You're talking about someone with the original Dream Team that wanted them to win so badly that other teams quit the sport, that the basketball became a national object of shame in certain countries. So I want complete, utter, ugly American dominance here. Obviously, we didn't get that. But I think when you look at what happened with having, you know, basically a third of the team be Celtics, I don't think it really worked out for Boston. There was hope that it would build this chemistry that would be sort of a launching pad, and it wasn't. Jason Tatum got hurt. He only played two games. When he played, he shot 32% from the field. Jaylen Brown didn't really make the leap. He played, you know, fine. He was fine. I mean, he was fine in the last game against Poland, the seventh place game. You know, he had 8 points, but it's not like he made some sort of really noticeable leap in his play that bodes well for the Celtics, that he's going to take it to the next level. Marcus Smart didn't really make any sort of leap, and he got hurt. He had a hand injury, and I think it was a quad injury. Wasn't even able to finish the tournament. And Kemba Walker, I thought, played well, but I thought it was also reinforced why Kemba Walker is sort of a notch down from the Kyrie Irvings of the world, because this was a USA basketball team that needed one transcendent star to carry them and sort of absolve them sort of from the sins of not having as much talent as prior USA basketball teams, and Kemba played well, but you see he's not that type of player. Like, there's a ceiling there, and you saw it in Charlotte too. The guy is brilliant. He's a great player, but he's not like the type of player that can drag a team to a title, or that can take a team that's not as talented and be able to make the guys around him better, and so that team can achieve more. So I think when you look at this tournament as a whole, I don't really think the Celtics got a whole heck of a lot out of it. I don't think it really worked out for them. If anything, it's like Tatum and Smart got hurt. Kemba Walker is who you thought, you know, he would be, and Jaylen Brown didn't really make any major progress in his game. So what was the point?
So has it lowered your expectations for what they may be this year?
I don't know if it's lowered or maybe a little bit, because, again, it reinforced to me that idea of Kemba Walker's not someone who can carry a team. And unless Tatum or Brown is going to make that leap that we projected for them, then I'm not really sure that the Celtics are suited or set up to be anything different than what they were last year, which is a team that gets bounced in the second round. So when I look at this tournament, I think there was a real opportunity there for them to build some chemistry, for guys to take their game to the next level. And I just didn't see any of that. I didn't see any of that from any of these guys.
That's not good. And I know you actually watch this crap. Like, I legitimately like the NBA, but, like, this World Cup FIBA, like, I got to get up at ass o'clock in the morning to watch it. Like, please do that on your own time. But I know you do that because you're like, you're a dork for this. So I'll take your word on it. And it doesn't make me feel all that great about him. Like, my expectations at best, Chris, are, you know, win a couple of rounds of the playoffs, but just give me something in the middle of January on a Wednesday that I can tune in and actually genuinely enjoy watching. Because last year, it was anything but. I would have rather stared at a wall come January with that team last year. But I don't know. Hearing what you say, and the Kemba Walker might not be as advertised. I think good, not great. Certainly, I thought a tick or two, or maybe a tick and a half below what Kyrie is, but seventh place in the world in this tournament? that's pathetic.
It is disgraceful.
Silver at best. Like, that's where you should be. Seventh?
I mean, when you look at, there was not a lot of proven all-star talent on this roster.
They were the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, I mean, it was like Donovan Mitchell, Kemba Walker. I mean, that's sort of it. And that maybe it would have been different if Tatum didn't get hurt. But that's what I'm saying. That's part of the risk of something like this, is that one of your young foundational pieces ends up getting hurt. And it's not like it's this, you know, career-altering injury. But again, he got hurt, wasn't able to play. I don't really think Jason Tatum got anything out of this. I just look at this and say the Celtics didn't get anything out of this. People were really excited about this, thought it could give them a leg up. They could build some chemistry. It could be a launching pad for the young guys to take a leap. None of that happened. All that happened was guys got hurt.
Chris, I would just like to point out that your basketball team, the Boston Celtics / Team USA, could not beat a nation of Serbia of 7 million people, which is approximately the size of Metro Houston. So that's probably not a great sign for your basketball team. And that's all I'll talk about, the FIFA World Cup of basketball or whatever this thing is called.
Because
I threatened to resign on Felgrim-Az this summer if I talked about it, so I can't talk about it
anymore. But this nation of 7 million people had, you know, Nikola Jokic and Bogdan Bogdanovic, you know, playing for them. I mean, they sort of had, like, you know, more talent than you did in a lot of ways. And again, that's what I would say, like, you know, when Bogdanovic is kind of going nuts for Serbia and having this good, you're like, well, okay, where's Jaylen Brown doing that? And obviously Tatum couldn't do it because he was hurt. And Marcus Smart got hurt too, but he's not that type of player. And I think the limitations of the Celtics team were exposed in this tournament.
Just find the best 15 players at a Houston area YMCA, and that's basically what the Celtics could not beat. That's just an undeniable fact.
You shouldn't be talking too much crap. How's your baseball team there, baseball boy?
Not great. I don't want to talk about them.
Yeah. Oh, no, you're going to be forced to coming up in the next hour, but we do have to talk more about Antonio Brown. A lot of you hanging. We'll get to that. The latest here, Antonio Brown. Did he travel with the team? Will he play tomorrow? Baseball boy over there is going to get you caught up in the Sports Hub headlines and then right to your calls, I promise, here on Gasper and Murray.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.